Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the OVB Online podcast on the Tour de France. For 3 weeks, we are joining team manager Ralf Denk as he leads the biggest and most successful German cycling team through the Tour de France. Do you have questions for Ralf Denk? Send them to tobias.rufeovbmedia.de. And now, enjoy the new episode.
A calm start and a furious finale. On the fifth stage to Pau, the sprinters left no doubt that today would be their day. The best of them today was Olaf Kuic from Team Decathlon. There are no changes in the general classification. As always, I send my greetings for our daily briefing to France to the team manager of Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe.
Greetings, Ralf Denk. Hello, good evening, and best regards to Hohenheim.
Yes, Ralf, it looked a bit more relaxed today than the past few days. The start was a bit later than usual. At first, at least in the peloton, there was a lot of talking, a bit of laughing, and the solo breakaway rider Baptiste Werdicki could also be controlled relatively well.
Was it as relaxed as it looked from the outside until the final, or how did you experience it? Yes, I would say almost all riders wished for today's stage. The first 4 days were extraordinarily intense, and everyone hoped a bit that it would be calmer today.
It also felt not quite as hot today as the last few days, and everyone was able to recover a bit because everyone also has tomorrow's tough Pyrenees stage in the back of their minds, and that is why we took it easy at first. But it is still a Tour de France stage. It is still about, or was about, a prestigious victory in Pau in the sprint finish, and that is why the finale was stressful after all.
Yes, we will get to that right away. 5 kilometers from the finish, there was a relatively bad crash in a right-hand turn. Several riders went down. At first glance, I would say none of you were involved.
Is that correct? Yes, that is correct. We got through it well, but we warned the riders again in the meeting this morning. Warned them, do not take the day too lightly. Stay focused, ride together. Do not mess around on the bike. On days like this, you can lose the Tour de France or have to drop out.
And that is why our instruction was to really focus on it again. But our guys did a very, very good job today, also with a view to tomorrow. Yes, I think on days like these, at least in the general classification, it is good if you are seen relatively little in the camera shots.
Is it the case that in your routine, when things are a bit more relaxed, you have a bit more time, you are on site, you are staying, I believe, in the same place today too? Do you have a different rhythm there, or do you really try to get up at the same time and keep things similar, or is everything a bit more spread out?
Well, today we actually slept at Toulouse Airport, and we had over 1 hour bus transfer to the start again today, so it wasn't much later today. And I don't think that's good. I believe the daily rhythm must be maintained. And also nice today, we have a hotel in Pau where the finish line was today. So the transfer is only 5 kilometers from the finish to the hotel. Very, very, very unusual for a Tour de France. You can definitely use that, I can imagine.
Let's take a look at the finale. As I said, it was definitely one for the sprinters today. We were expecting big names like Tim Merlier and Jasper Philipsen. In the end, it was Olaf Kuic, also no stranger to the scene.
What is your take on the finale? Yes, one of the really big sprinters won here. I would have really, really loved for Max Kanter, who finished second for Team Astana, to win here. But it just wasn't quite enough.
So the best rider deservedly won today. I watched the sprint, of course, and Team Merlier and Jasper Philipsen, the big favorites, were somewhat out of contention today. Yes.
How do you see the dual role that Team Decathlon is taking on? They have France's great young hope in Paul Lapeyre, but also a sprinter who doesn't get quite as much support because of it.
Now you could easily say they won the first sprint, so it worked out perfectly. You deliberately decided against it to have maximum support in the mountains as well. You also thought about it. How do you see the way they did it? I mean, right now it looks very good, of course.
Because primarily the winner is always right and they won today. We will see what impact that has on the general classification. It is definitely a bold decision what they have done. They have a very, very ambitious young man, Paul Saxas, with them, who wants to reach the podium. And then they also entered a sprinter. That is a bold decision to start with. It has naturally caused quite a stir, not just in France. They kind of messed up the team time trial. They blamed it on the sprinters around Kuij and his lead out men. I think it is not easy for Paul Saxas to understand that there is another sprinter here, even though he arrived in super form. And yes, the next stages will show whether Paul Saxas can also deliver, or if the decision to shine in the sprint finishes and have a sprinter along was the right one. So as I said, that is not my team, the Decathlon team, but they definitely made a bold decision. Yes, and whether it pays off, we will see.
Ralf, even though it was a bit cooler today, I still want to go over what we briefly touched upon yesterday. It was warm again, and we already mentioned everything you are doing on site. You have an entire team taking care of having cooling vests, handing out ice packs. Afterwards, they go into the ice bath, bottles are handed out endlessly. But what I would still be interested in, and surely some of our listeners too, what do the riders do to prepare for such conditions? I know there's a big trend, which is now almost ubiquitous, with heat training. You see people sitting on indoor trainers in painter's suits or very warmly wrapped up. Can you give some insight into that? What exactly do you do there, and what is it all good for?
Yes, you have to distinguish between heat training and heat acclimatization. Heat training has a similar effect to altitude training, and heat adaptation is something you do more to prepare for races that take place in warm or hot climates. So those are two different things. What you mentioned with the painter's suit, both bundled up very warmly on the trainer, that is heat training. You actually add that to your normal training for about an hour. You get on the bike trainer, you bundle up very warmly, and you raise your core body temperature to 38 or 38.5 degrees. You can measure that with an air thermometer or with a core body temperature sensor on your heart rate monitor. And when you push your body temperature into those ranges, it has an effect similar to altitude training. So that is one thing when we talk about heat training. Regarding heat adaptation, that also happens after training, but that happens more perhaps with very hot baths in the tub. I go, even though it is already warm outside, into the sauna afterwards.
Those are more for acclimatization when I like here now for preparing myself for hot races. I see. I also have heat adaptation versus heat training written down here, but you have already wonderfully sorted that out. Accordingly, we will, of course, stick to one thing for now.
I'll go back to heat training for a second. Do all riders actually do this now, because you see it everywhere on Instagram and because it obviously has a scientifically proven effect? Or how do you approach it? Do you do it individually? I know I've seen Van der Poel doing it even before he joined your team. What are your guidelines there?
Yes, that is different from case to case. I cannot go into too much detail because I am not a training scientist. But I have been told or noticed in my team that with heat training, you run less of a risk of doing something wrong than with altitude training. In altitude training, you can also do a great, great many things wrong. That means you go too fast at altitude, you don't acclimatize properly, so the risk of getting sick at altitude is definitely higher than if you train at sea level, and so on. So the danger of a lot going wrong at an altitude training camp is there. The chance of a lot going wrong with heat training is relatively low. That means heat training might not be quite as effective as altitude training, but you are nowhere near as likely to do something wrong, and it is actually also easier to implement. And that is why you can do a lot of base work with heat training versus an altitude training camp.
I see, and you do that too, so every one of your riders has that integrated into their training program.
That is determined individually or recommended by the coaches, but definitely we have had that and will have it in the future. All right, then I will move on to the second pair of shoes, heat acclimatization, heat adaptation.
When do you do something like that? And is that also a direct part of the final preparation because the body gets unaccustomed to it again, hot baths, sauna, etc.? Or how do you go about integrating that? Yes, that is simply a recovery measure, which also has the effect of preparing for hot races.
A normal person, if they cycle for 4 or 5 hours at 30 degrees, they actually don't go to the sauna afterwards, but you go to the sauna afterwards or get into the bathtub and make the water as hot as you can just about stand. That is then a real adaptation for hot races.
Okay, but that is really an area for, let's say, professional work in order to be ready for those conditions, right? Because I can say from my own experience, I have tried both. It is not all that fun because you put out very little power at a very high heart rate, precisely because this heat effect is added. And as you just described, the sauna session at 30 degrees is also, yes, not very pleasant.
Would you recommend that to people who want to try it out now, or is that really a thing for pure professionals? Well, I would rather say pure professionals, very ambitious hobby riders, amateur cyclists, they can try it out.
Personally, I don't find it enjoyable, absolutely not, but it works, at least for those days. It is very, very helpful, and from what I gathered from the interviews, there were hot stages in the past too, and it seems like the riders are better prepared for that now. Would you agree with that, all things considered?
Yes, definitely, because in the past, no measures were taken at all for such hot races, neither in the preparation nor directly during the race or before the race, but you just accepted the heat. And today you really deal with the heat in advance, but also during the race. And in my opinion, that is also a main reason why races currently tend to be faster, because we have learned so much about the nuance of heat adaptation, scientifically based, and that simply did not exist 20 years ago. Wonderful.
We are looking at the next stage, but before we do that, I have a very small announcement, and that is about a giveaway on our Instagram page. The new Instagram account at inside.tourdefrancepodcast. There is the opportunity to win a white jersey from last year from Florian Lipowitz. All you have to do is stop by that page. Everything is described there or in the show notes below. So if you want to secure a signed Lipowitz jersey, a quick disclaimer, it's available through us and the winner will be notified at the end of the Tour de France. Right, a quick interlude over. Ralf, we are looking at tomorrow and we can expect much less relaxation than today. We are heading into the Pyrenees, covering over 4,000 meters of climbing, including the Col du Tourmalet and a summit finish.
What do you expect for tomorrow? A big battle? Yes, it is a very, very difficult stage tomorrow. The first time in the high mountains with climbs over 10 kilometers.
In my opinion, there are two scenarios. Either the UAE team and Pogacar, who have made the strongest impression so far as a team and as an individual rider, start a war so that everything basically explodes in the peloton and everyone rides up the decisive mountain, the Tourmalet, on their own. Or they say, okay, we... let the Norwegian rider take the yellow jersey yesterday relatively without a fight. We also want him to wear it after tomorrow's stage because it takes the burden and work off our team. It saves our resources. That could also be a scenario. Well, I think that tomorrow the UA team will be in charge of how the race unfolds, and everyone else, including us, will actually have more of a reactive role. First, we'll see how high the base pace is. How will the Pogacar attack be prepared? And we will first see to it that we are in a good position and for as long as possible can keep up with the best of the best on the Tourmalet and then perhaps also on the final climb up to Gavarni.
Yes, so what I'm hearing is that your tactic is to keep the scenario open and to stay with them accordingly without saying yourselves that you'll make a move here or there and potentially want to attack somewhere.
Yes, well, you saw in the first stages how strong the team is, how strong Tadej Pogacar is. I think no one wants to walk into a trap, and that is why I think the other teams, including us, but also the Decathlon team and the Visma team, will ride rather cautiously at first. Or perhaps the young Frenchman Paul Setcher is so inspired by the Col du Tourmalet. It is a classic mystical mountain that he might try something against Pogacar, but I would be surprised. I think everyone is waiting to see what UAE and Pogacar do.
All right, we will take a look at that as always. Also, a quick announcement for tomorrow. It is a bit of a special case. We have to improvise a little. You have an important appointment right after the stage, and that means for us we can only speak very, very late. That does not mean the episode will be cancelled, but we will talk as soon as possible and analyze the whole stage, and that will be whenever it is possible. A quick question about that. Can you say anything about the important meeting that is delaying the podcast, or is there no information on that?
Yes, I am sorry that I will not be available tomorrow after the race, but we have already talked about it. The Tour de France is not just a very big sporting event, but business is also being done around it. For me as CEO, the business side is at least as important as the sporting side, and there are a few things on the agenda tomorrow. I cannot postpone them, but I will still take some time before going to bed to give a quick update on the day.
That is exactly how we will do it. It will also be edited that same evening. That means for the night owls among you, you will get to hear it then. The rest will follow the next morning.
For today, I'll say thank you very much and send my best regards to France. You're very welcome. And best regards back to Rosenheim.
That was the latest episode of Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OVB Online about the Tour de France. You can find the podcast on all common podcatchers and on the websites of OVB Media and Ippen Media. Thanks for listening and see you in the next episode.